Good morning, and thanks for joining us today for another Two Coats of Paint conversation. I am your host, Sharon Butler, painter, art writer, and publisher of Two Coats of Paint. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a New York blogazine about painting. Today, the conversation is about building a studio. And when I went to MoMA to see Matisse, the Red Studio, which is a show that centers around a painting Matisse made of his studio, which is funny because it's very much like the images that we post on Instagram now. But he made a painting of a studio, and it's about the story of that painting and then the other paintings in the studio. But there was Matisse, and this I was going to say was on, there's an entire wall of the exhibition is taken up with this, the story of building the studio itself. And it's a familiar story because he was living in Paris, Matisse I'm talking about, and he'd gone from rental to rental, attic garrets and so forth. And then he was living in a convent where he taught and had his studio, and his family lived with him too. And the convent got sold, and so he was had to move out. And he and his family ended up moving to a little town called Issy-les-Moulineaux. I'm sorry for my French accent. We'll have to get someone who speaks French up here to say that properly. Anyway, they moved to this little town that was southwest of Paris, like 4 miles southwest, industrial town. And they rented a space there. They rented a housing. But then there was also property there, and he decided to build a studio. And he worked with a company that specialized in these prefabricated buildings. And the studio was 33 feet by 33 feet, so it was square. And then it had 16-foot ceilings. And the north wall was almost entirely glass. And then he installed skylights on the north side of the roof, and then he planted gardens around it. And you know, it said that his color was inspired by the vivid color of the flowers. So it's a wonderful show if you like that kind of historical thing about the work itself. And so you should go see it if you're in the city. It's on view through September 12th. And so, you know, when I saw that, it reminded me about how many artists who left the city during the pandemic, they found themselves working in the cramped extra rooms and, you know, the basements and attics, and finally got to the point where they decided if they had land of their own, they decided to build an outbuilding. And so today we're joined by Terry Hackett and Steve Hicks, both painters, who are in the process of building studios. And so I thought it'd be interesting to find out what they've learned about the experience. Hi, Terry and Steve.
Hi, Sharon. Hi, Steve.
Steve can't talk. He's muted. There you go.
Say hi. Hi.
Thank you so much.
I don't know if I have noise coming, but I don't. There's no noise around. But anyway, don't let me know.
Maybe it was your microphone hitting against your shirt or something.
No,
like that.
I'm away from my phone. I have my earphones on. Huh. Anyway, we'll see.
All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. All right, so I want to start a little bit by talking about your work. You know, you're both painters. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you do, and then we'll move on to talking about the studios, because I think, you know, the studios that we inhabit or build, you know, are really sort of inspired and informed by the work that we do. So, Terry, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about your work.
Well, I'm a painter, been always experimenting with materials and different surfaces, and the outcome usually turns into a painting installation. My work sort of hovers between landscape and abstraction, so I really like that ambiguous sort of area of and mainly about kind of flipping the perspective and the plane, just so that the viewer is not necessarily sure what they're looking at. So that's what my work is about.
And you show at High Noon, right?
I show at High Noon Gallery. And last year at this time, I had a painting installation there.
Yeah, and I saw that High Noon is collaborating with Marquee Projects.
Yes,
in Bellport.
Marquise show's opening this Friday out in Bellport. And I'm sorry if that my phone keeps beeping. So that is on, if anybody's out in Bellport, Long Island, the Friday there's an opening there. I will have some work, new work, very fresh work there in that show. Yes.
All right. Thanks, Terry. Steve?
Yeah. I just want to say
that Steve was also, if you saw the show Mod that I curated at Platform Project Space in Dumbo this past month, it just came down Saturday. Steve was in that show, so you may have already seen his work. But go ahead, Steve, tell us about your work.
So I started painting relatively late because I was a carpenter and an architect first, so that sort of will inform the later part of the discussion, and then I went to the studio school. It was during the 88 recession, and so there was no work, and I had been drawing a lot. And so at the studio school, I really pretty much embraced all of that stuff, and I painted from observation and did that for a couple decades, and then in different forms, inside and outside, and naked, painted myself naked. It came to that. And then I did a 180-degree turn. It wasn't gradual at all. I started to paint abstractly. It was just a complete bump. And that was around maybe 10, 15 years ago. I guess 12, 15 years ago. It was a slow. I mean, it was abrupt, but anyway. And so my work completely changed, and I'm an abstract painter. I mean, really, and it's abstract. It's not like, you know, I don't have like a feeling of that there's images there or anything like that. So,
pure abstract painter, and really interested in color, I think, right?
I guess.
Color, you know, relationships.
I've always been interested in color, but it just has had, I mean, I've always been very interested in color, although you may not think that from my observational paintings because of the constraints of observation, but I've always mm-hmm. thought about it a lot. Like, mm-hmm. and I kind of feel that color, it's interesting, color just begs to be analyzed, but in the mm-hmm. end you have to be completely intuitive. You know, I think everyone would kind of agree with that, at least the second part of that. But
right.
I've always analyzed it. And then, you know, but then, I think, yes, for sure, painting abstractly has freed that for me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
it went from looking for light, or, you know, painting the light, as everyone mm-hmm. used to sort of say, which I still respect very much, to let, you know, just letting all that go and going, oh, wait a second, there's something else here. So mm-hmm. that was part of the 180 degree turn.
Right. So you both have been in the process of building studios. I'm not sure if they're completed yet. Did you ever put a floor in yours? If anybody's interested, there are, if you go to their Instagram accounts, you'll see and scroll through, you'll see pictures of the studios that they're building. So the last I saw pictures of Terry's studio, it was built, but there was no floor. Do you want to talk a little bit about the process?
In like about 4 days before Christmas, I had this, my pole barn. I have a pole barn, which is a very different kind of construction. It's not stick built, which is like usually 2x6. That's a different. So a pole barn, I can go into detail about that, you know, a little bit later, but I'll just give you like a quick synopsis of the situation. So a pole barn is like a prefab a building. And right now this week, we're going to be putting down, pouring a slab, and I'll be insulating it with rigid foam insulation. And that is something one does after putting down a vapor barrier. And these are all the things that I have learned about building science myself by watching lots of YouTube movies. And so the reason why we're doing the ground now and not in December is because the ground was frozen and you can't necessarily pour concrete, cement during that time because you can't, you don't want it to freeze. You want your temperatures to be correct for these kind of things. And it's very amazing because the ground, what you probably saw, is just, it's just gravel because they just dig, they put these posts in the ground, they go down like 3 feet, they put some concrete to hold the post up, and then they wait till that settles. And the ground is frozen, and it starts to sort of weep up from the ground. So it leaches, the water leaches from the ground. So all of that has to cure before one can actually do serious, you know, putting down a slab.
But you had a studio there, and you outgrew it, right? You wanted something bigger.
Yes.
You have a few outbuildings at your property, I believe.
One is just a shed, which I had bought when I took and converted the garage that I have, which was only 20 by 22, and I converted that into my studio while I was still working in Dumbo, so I had a second studio. Uh-huh. Past July, I moved everything, you know, 35 years worth of work up here. And it took up half the studio. So I used that as a storage space.
Oh, I see. So
about 250 square feet is all storage racks of paintings. And
right.
So that's part of the conversion. And then, so this is a bigger studio. It's not connected to the other studio because that also has some issues when you connect a building to an existing building. So
right, right.
But anyway, that's what I have.
And you went with, how did you decide to go with the manufacturer that you went with? I mean, not just build it out of wood or something.
Well, I had gone through all these different scenarios. I had such an incredible design. I had also an architect friend come up with something that was really fantastic, probably much better for a place in LA near the desert or something. You know, not when there's snow loads and it's freezing.
Right.
And, you know, with an extremely tight budget. So this is all very budget oriented. So,
did you have a budget and say I want to keep it under this amount, or
I wanted to keep it under a certain amount? And I had started looking at these, they're just called pole barns, and generally they're made by the Amish and they're built by the Mennonites, and they're all, not necessarily all of them, because there's different companies all over the place, but that's really, you know, that's where the industry really, these are the guys that built my studio. And I had been looking online at all different kinds of situation, from metal buildings to a pole barn is like a combination between the interior, the posts, and the what are they called? I'm going to say the risers, but they're I'm blanking right now. But anyway, everything is wood, and then a metal sheathing over that. And it's basically there's a lot of combination between doing this, and you can design it yourself, it really helps to you're tweaking something that is sort of an agriculture building that is normally used for farms or barns or garages, and then I tweaked it and made it into something that looks a little bit more like a studio. And I also changed the trusses inside, and I ordered my own windows and my own doors. Mm-hmm. So I worked with this one company, and I must have emailed him like about 15 times, and every single time, because I was trying to, you know, I came up with a design, and I kept, you know, saying, could you just move those windows a little bit? A little closer, so that we got it down to what I wanted. And anyway, there's lots of information online. There's lots of companies. But one of the things I want to say, in the past year and a half, from the time I started this in 2020, the prices, I had probably five different quotes from different companies. And those quotes went from anywhere between $50,000 to like $80,000 in a year's time. So this is one company that only raised it like maybe 5%. So
right.
And they were using that whole supply chain thing as a reason to like jack up the prices.
Right.
So anyway, that's sort of a synopsis of very
all right.
detailed.
Well, Steve, your situation was different because you are trained not only as a carpenter but as a architect. So tell us a little bit about how you decided to build. I mean, did you have a studio on the property before or in the house?
There's a studio on the property in the garage.
I should say also that Steve's wife is also a painter. So
yeah, so there are two of us. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
So the property, it's near where Elizabeth's mom lived in the summer, and the reason we're there is pretty much because she was there and she died and she's buried out there, and so we ended up getting this property 5-6 years ago, and it has a garage, and it's a garage and this room that's a very it's a good studio. Like when we first went there, oh, that's a studio. And now, you know, you're looking at it, well, actually bugs get in and poop on your paintings and whatever. But it's sort of like, okay, we got one studio. And I always knew that, we still don't know how much time we're going to – we never had a house in the country. And it's sort of like putting the cart before the horse, I guess, because I knew I couldn't spend a lot of time out there unless I could work. But I didn't like just going out for weekends, and so I wanted to spend anyway. So I finally just decided, you know what? I always knew I wanted. Anyway, bought the property with the idea of building a studio, and then it was a problem of whether we would do. Can you guys hear me? I feel like
yes, yes. I was just turned my mic off so I could have a sip of my coffee.
I'm sorry. Okay.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
So anyway, the decision to build it was, you know, iffy because it was going to cost a lot, obviously. I mean, it always does. And would it be used? And finally, I kind of went with it. I think COVID, we went out there for COVID and we shared the existing studio, paying half a day each, and that was fine. And it was sort of like, okay, let's do this. And then the other thing was I had being an architect and a carpenter, every time we've done something, I've always ended up kind of being the contractor. I've never been able to either afford or trust someone else to do that. And it's a conflict for me because I want to paint, but I also know and enjoy building. Mm-hmm. So that's a nice problem to have, I guess, but I always feel like it splits me. You know, I'm always feeling like I'm all over the place a little bit. But so I was kind of worried about that. So I have this wonderful person I met. I don't know how to describe. He actually was living in the garage when we bought the property, and he's a Kiwi from New Zealand, and he's just a building nut. I've never met anyone and I don't know why he's agreeing to work with me for me, but he is. So he's there constantly. So it was a little bit of, if I ever build this, I need him I need him there. And so he was going back to New Zealand during COVID, but anyway, so a year ago, it was almost exactly a year ago, you know, I mean, it was more than a year ago, but that we started building a year ago. A year and a half ago, I started to really design it, like with the idea that it has to be ready to, you know, we have to submit it to the town and all that shit, which really did take a long time. But then we started. I'm getting off track. What am I talking about?
Well, you were working with your friend. You were working with your friend, and you got through all the permitting process. Then you had to break ground or whatever.
Yeah, that was just so – it's so interesting. People say, oh, when is your studio going to be finished? And I go, well, you know, it's like saying, when is your painting going to be finished? Like, what does finished mean? You know, it's like a vague thing. But when it starts, it starts. Like, you get – you know, you have a hole in the ground. You start digging a hole in the ground. It's, like, very clear in a painting is sort of the same way too. It's like, okay, throw some paint on. How do you do this?
Right.
And you get going. So that was a year ago that it started. And it's really been I mean, I'm so happy. Even if I never use it, which I will, but I mean, it's really been satisfying. It's really a beautiful building. It's very simple. It's a rectangle, but it has a couple of tweaks in it that have really made it. And I've always, you know, I've always been designing the perfect studio. Like, how would it work? What's the proportion? Where would I store paintings? How would that work? You know, and all that kind of thing. So that kind of went into it. And then it's actually, in a way, it's two studios in a way. It's a studio mm-hmm. and like a quote pool house that we're allowed uh-huh. to build. But we're also allowed to build two studios. So anyway, it's like two spaces, one slightly bigger than the other. And the other one could be a bedroom or a studio.
That's interesting.
It's
zoning,
both simple but really well built, which is nice. But yeah, the zoning. Oh yeah, we had to get a special whatever it's called. We had to apply for it because it's bigger than what they uh-huh. allowed. So we had to wait.
But it's okay if it's a pool house, but not a studio.
No, right? It's okay. It just can't be a bedroom. No, it can't. It's not allowed to have a bathroom.
I see.
They don't want people, you know, doing that kind of thing where they're renting out, or so. It's not allowed to have a bathroom. Although I'm not going to say anything now. But one
yes,
might
don't
go
say
in
anything.
By mistake after we get to see about. I don't know. It's the same thing. I think. I mean, I'm sure the budget was higher than Terry's, but still we're all budget conscious. And so I was really, when I was designing it, I have so many models that I built, which that were, you know, kind of elaborate in retrospect. I didn't think they were. I was trying to figure out Claire's story, you know, how Claire, anyway, and I just kept going, no, rectangle. It just kept going back to the rectangle.
I imagine it's hard as an architect to, you know, limit yourself because you know all the possibilities and yet you have a budget.
I'm a carpenter too. So so it is hard as an architect, but it's not hard as a carpenter, you know, like, no, you don't need that extra corner, you know, or whatever.
Right. So yeah. Terry, what was the hardest part? What has been the hardest part? Cause you're not quite done yet.
It's you know, this is where, you know, I am the contractor and the designer and the one that says, okay,
and the client.
And the client. And one of the things, it's very hard to do things on a really tight budget because, you know, you want to do it right. And, you know, as Steve was just saying, I had all these models. I had all these ideas. I really wanted, you know, to flood natural light on the roof and use sun tunnels I have on my other studio, which are fantastic. If anybody doesn't know what they are, you should always look into them because they have this most even light, much better than skylights. And, you know, the thing about it is that I too, even though I'm not an architect, I took architectural drafting as a young student after undergrad. And so I had a kind of fundamental basics on what I wanted. But the more that you dive into designing something, the more expensive things are. So then you start to scale down to say, all right, what can I build for, you know, anywhere between, you know, I don't know what I was thinking, $40,000, $60,000, which is really hard to do because mm-hmm. the tighter the budget you have, the harder it is to do things. So, also to shopping around and compromising, you know, I mean, I can't tell you how many people told me to put in radiant floor heat, you know, and I'm just like going, okay, I would love radiant floor heat, but I just want to get somebody in here that can do a slab properly. That, you know, and that's where I am now. So I think it's when you're doing something like that is to not get overwhelmed with saying, oh, this is going to cost me so much. And I'd like to go into that a little bit more about affordability and sustainability and what one can actually achieve, in and not think that, oh, because I can't have the creme de creme, that I can't, you know, have just a studio, because we can all work in a barn. We can all work in a place as long as, you know, for me, my goals are having something that's insulated, warm in the winter, and high ceilings and some good lighting. And because I'm not having those sun tunnels that I wanted or skylights on top, because I want to put solar panels on top of this building, there's a lot of prep that has to go with in terms of getting your groundwork when you do a building. And that is far more money than I had thought about taking down trees, doing all the water in terms of like French drains, that took over.
What are French drains? What are French drains?
You're taking a perforated pipe and putting it in the ground so that
water. Oh, I see.
Anywhere off of a mountainside, so where I am, there's a lot of rainwater. And so getting the groundwork done took me much longer than I thought, because I'm shopping for somebody, to do excavation, and I'm not putting in I'm sure Steve has like a frost line, goes down and because then you have, when you do that, you're digging down in the ground, you have like water and pipes. I'm not putting water. I'm doing basic electrical. So everything is so basic. And so that is the hardest part, is to keep focused, keep it basic.
I remember having a studio in a barn, and I just had a hose that I would bring in from the faucet outside to use for water. And that was fine, but if I had to build the thing, I would probably think, I'm going to all this expense. I really have to get the water in the put in plumbing or something. It's like we make do when we're just given circumstances, but then when you're in the situation where you're designing it yourself, it's hard to just cut it off like that, because you're spending X amount. What's X plus, three, a little bit more.
And one of the other things is that you probably don't have water in your studio now. You go down the hallway. Is that correct? Or do you have a sink? No.
I have no water. No.
So the thing is that we just have to remind ourselves, just like, okay, this is, because adding water to the studio is probably an extra 10 grand.
So, right.
And also too, then you have to worry about pipes freezing. So those are all the things that you don't, you just try to keep it simple,
right,
and basic. It all depends, because I'm like, I think that it was kind of funny when you asked, I was thinking about Steve, you're having your place out in Long Island, and the permits and the zoning and construction costs, all those things are far exceed than what they are in Pennsylvania. But at the same time, I think it's kind of like I'm on the low brow and there's the high brow of studios, So I just want to pitch the fact that the affordability of doing things. I think that people get weighed down about, oh, that means that you have to have lots of money to do stuff. And I just don't believe that, So anyway, that's my...
Well, I think it's sort of interesting that artists tend to spend every last penny on whatever it is they need to make their work, whether it's canvas or paint or brushes or studio space. And in fact, you may say it costs $60,000 to build this space, but, what you spend on rent is probably that plus. Think of how much we spent on your studio in Dumbo over you were there 30 years, right?
Yeah, more
or 20 years. I don't know. How long were you there?
1984.
Oh my gosh.
So that's a long time. But also too, that's the painful part of, I think, as artists, we tend to kind of go on this sort of treadmill of each month just paying the rent and doing the work and wanting to do that and not interrupt ourselves to say, what is the long-term plan? And,
right.
I think that that's something at a certain point in people's lives have to say, what am I going to, after I was evicted and vacated, I said, I need to have a place that it's not going to happen to me. So at least I have a safe place to store my work And I'm not talking about an expensive house. I found this house online and I had no idea if there was anybody I knew in the, around, you know. So because the mortgage on this house was cheaper than a storage space in Dumbo. So
that's, I've heard of people doing that, going out to wherever and buying houses together and just using them for storage because it is cheaper than getting a, you know, storage space in the city.
Yeah, it just takes a little effort. That's all.
Right. All right. I want to take a little break here. This is the point in the conversation where we take a break and give a brief shout to Two Coats friends and sponsors. And then after the break, if anyone in the audience has a comment or question, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have similar experiences. Feel free to raise your hand and we'll bring you up onto the stage to talk. First of all, I want to thank Pratt Manhattan Gallery. It's now in a ground floor space at 144 West 14th Street. They have a show called Chromotherapy in an Age of Doubt, and it's the Fine Art MFA alumni from 2020. Their exhibition was postponed due to COVID, so that's on view through June 4th. And then at the Painting Center, there's a show that opens this week, Randy Rice McCormack's Traveling Sideways. She has a solo show, or Randy has a solo show. And then in the project room, Drawing Through with Beth Derry, William Holton, Patricia Spergel. And all those shows open May 24th, which is tomorrow. And I think they have the receptions on Thursday. And they're on view through June 18th. At Norte Mar, a two-person show with Mimi Chen Ting and Lizzie Scott is on view through June 5th. They're located at 88 Pine Street in Cypress Hills, Brooklyn. And that's a trip on the J or the Z train to Brooklyn and the Crescent Street stop. Marquee Projects, which we mentioned earlier, has a show opening on May 27th. Let's see. I also want to thank members of the Two Coats social media project. The Two Coats team helps them organize and produce their social media feeds. We're now accepting new accounts for June. So if you're interested, just click on the social media ad in the Two Coats of Paint sidebar for info on how to get started. And finally, huge thanks to all the generous readers and listeners who made donations to our annual year-end fund drive. I can't believe it's already nearly 6 months since we did the fund drive, but it's true, and I want to thank you for your generous support. So this year, you know what? In May, Two Coats of Paint passed its 15th anniversary, so we've been publishing for 15 years. All right, in case you're just joining us, we have Terry Hackett and Steve Hicks talking about building a studio, outbuilding. So and I see we have somebody who wants to come up. Let's see who this is. Chris Moss, I'm going to invite you up here. And also, Terry and Steve, I want you to think about what was your biggest mistake? I've invited Chris up. Oh, there you are.
Hi.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hi. I'm well, thanks. I'm glad there's a topic I actually know a lot about right now.
Did you build a studio?
I did a similar thing to Terry, where I couldn't afford an architect, and I kind of needed an architect to get through the city planning commission and all of that stuff. And then I found a company, Hanson Pole Buildings, that will clear all of that stuff for you, and it was the cheapest way to do it. And it was basically, I did it at exactly the right time, because it was right before everything got really expensive. Mm-hmm. I finished the building in 2019. So
So what do you mean they'll do everything for you?
Well, so at least Hanson, I don't know about other places, but they will, they have licensed architects in every single state. And so they will design the building to their specs and then work with an architecture firm in every state or somebody who's licensed in every state. And then they'll mail you the tube with your drawings in it. And then you just bring them to the planning commission or, you know, whoever you have to bring them to, the city.
Did you find the same situation with the excavation? Taking more time and money than you expected?
Fortunately, in 2016, I don't live in the Northeast anymore. I moved to Savannah, Georgia. So mm-hmm. that some of those ground concerns aren't real concerns for me at all, like freezing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, fortunately, my dad and I are both kind of handy people, so we were able to do all the excavating and tree clearing ourselves.
Oh, wow. Did you get a backhoe or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
It was fun.
I bet. So, let's start with you then, Chris. What would you do since you finished it? What do you think was your biggest mistake? Like, how would you do it differently if you did it again?
I want a second story.
You want a second story?
I'm on a city lot. It's not that big. It's like, I don't remember what the square footage of my lot is. And that building is right behind my house. And I used up all of the room in the yard that I thought I could for the building without thinking I could build twice as much just by building a second story. And for storage space, for office space, for 100 reasons, I'm kicking myself for not building a second story. But it's over, so I shouldn't beat myself up too much about that.
Although I bet that would be harder to get past zoning.
I don't think so. Even people that were working with me locally said, why aren't you, like, kind of... I don't think it would have. There are two-story houses in this neighborhood, so I think it would have been fine.
Right. All right. Steve, what was your biggest mistake? What would you do differently?
I don't know yet.
It's too soon to say.
Yeah, it is too soon. There's a part of me goes, when you were describing Matisse's 33 by 33 foot studio, I'm like, maybe I should have made mine bigger. But,
big is it? The big pictures look bigger than
33. Oh, no, mine's the studio space itself is 19 by 21. It's actually very close to Pollock's studio. I was just curious. So I found out what his studio
well,
was.
Isn't that nearby? It's kind of in the neighborhood.
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving up more information than I want to. But,
I had a 20 by 20 foot barn, and it was fine.
Yeah, no, it is fine. The storage
was an issue.
Trevor Wingfield said something to me once years ago. It's funny how someone says, I was in a tiny little room doing something. He goes, it was just sort of like, I love small spaces. They're just so, and it's true. And in graduate school, I remember they had ridiculously small studios and you just have to bust out of it. And those kind of constraints, all the constraints we're talking about, I know water, size, I mean, all those things, they're not a problem, actually.
Right,
Probably a good thing, so.
Yes, and you can always build another outbuilding if you need more storage.
Yeah, no, I have storage. Yeah, I don't have any, I don't know yet.
Well, I suppose
so far,
it's hard
so
to
good.
Say, yeah, it's hard to say until you actually move in and start working there. Terry, have you started working in there? I don't think you have, but
I kept thinking of trying to put a big painting up, but I just have to hold tight. I'm still working in my old studio. The processes now is the slab, and then I'm going to have a closed cell foam insulation that's happening in the week after that, and then I'll be framing the walls and insulating those and sheetrocking. And in the next month and a half, I will post some pictures on my Instagram and to show everybody how it's moving along. So these are all these different steps, you know.
Are you doing that all yourself?
Well, I've got somebody. The framing, the foam is a different company that's doing that. The slab is basically I'm going to be laying the 2-inch rigid foam insulation. Ray's going to help me. And it doesn't seem so hard. I've so many YouTube videos, you know.
Right. And so, thank God for YouTube.
Yes, it's a whole different thing. So that's happening, and I'm doing that. And the framing, I know how to do that, but I'm just kind of phasing myself out of doing construction because I really, my body is not as strong as it used to be. So I'm hoping to get some, you know, just some kind of crew in here to like, and I'll just manage them because I know exactly what I want. I know how it's done. So,
and then
electric, and then I'll be in there. I mean, I do need to get like a wood burning stove or propane heater. You know, that's the other thing. It's just like very, everything is kind of compartmentalized and, you know, one step at a time and it'll be done. And then the solar panels, the solar panels is going to be the hardest thing because that's all over the place, you know, and I wish I knew more about, you know, how to, cause you know, it's just, there's so much weird regulation and sort of stuff, but, you know, my permitting sort of situation was much easier than Chris was talking about because you do have to have drawings and plans and, you know, you have to have setbacks and you have to know exactly where your site is and, you know, making sure that your site is, you know, is okay with the township wherever you are is one of is a very important because you want to be able to get your C of O, you know.
Right. Yeah. In fact, I would recommend starting to go to the zoning meetings now, you know, if you know that you're going to want to have plans approved.
Well, I think it's
to get to know what they're looking for.
Well, you get to know the building inspector of the
right.
And if you know the building inspector and you become friendly with them, and I think I feel like asking questions is like the best thing. I mean, this guy that's my building inspector, he's just like so into building science, so he's a building nerd. So if you ask questions about this and that, he just loves to talk. So information that's free.
That's a really good point. There's a lot of people who could give who will give you free advice.
And there's also too, there's this site, it's called Garage Journal, and there are so many, it's just very nerdy about building science, you know, and that's what it's called. Like, because a metal building is very, very different than a stick building, which Steve has, because metal has many issues that I have learned because it sweats. There's condensation. Sweating, you have to, in order to insulate it, you can't just slap some, you know, regular insulation on that. You have to really, because you don't want to have moisture build up between
the
vapor barrier. All these weird stuff that is just like, you know, before you know it, you're like, you know, you're talking about vapor barriers for like days on end. You know? So it's like.
Right. And also, you have to think about small animal invasion.
Yeah, well, that's already happens in the house anyway. So.
Right. I remember having some squirrels in my studio that lived in the attic. And it was a little scary, you know, because they got to be so loud. And they are kind of ferocious.
I think when I bought this house, there was a regular Friday night squirrel poker party going on. I mean, there was a squirrel throwing insulation from the ceiling down at my Roxy. Right.
And then they come through the ceiling, you know, and then they're in the main house.
It took me years to get rid of, you know, you rip out the walls, you get rid of all the old stuff and start over, you know.
But they're like homing pigeons. They just come back.
Well, that's why we got a dog.
Right. All right, Steve. So what you don't really know what you would do. What would you,
yeah,
I was going to say,
I mean, I've spent so much time. I mean, I really did, you know, think about it a lot and drew and made, you know, and I, so I don't have, you know, there's nothing yet that I've gone, oh shoot. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely gone over budget, but I knew that would happen. and hasn't gone over budget. It's just gone over budget. I also feel like I'm saving a lot of money. I mean, the guy I'm working with is really great, saving money, even though everything's so over the top nowadays.
Mm-hmm. But I do think, you know, this notion that it costs a lot of money, I think, is a little bit of a red herring, because we spend so much money on studios anyway. And building your own gives you control over your space. Nobody's going to buy the building and kick you out.
Right. Yeah.
I totally agree. I think that that's one of the most important things at a certain point in one's career to think about that, because I feel like if you're always, or either that, you're just making art out of a suitcase. And I think for years you did that. You were going from one, not out of a suitcase, but you were like subleasing studios. No,
I had a rolling cart. It was much more civilized than just a suitcase. Yes, but I was itinerant. I would go from sublet to sublet.
Exactly.
Yeah. And in fact, that's how I met you, was when I ended up subletting your studio in Dumbo.
Exactly. So, yeah. Anyway, it is something to think about, and I don't think that it's, so unimaginable to think if you're living in a city like New York City or somewhere else, and you need to go and find a place that's affordable, you can just take a compass and say, what's 2 hours out of the city? Fine. And it doesn't, eventually you'll find out that there's lots of people that you know that are doing the same thing,
Right. Right.
Just actually the fact that I'm in Pennsylvania, I can't even believe that. But I'm also 15 minutes from the border of New York, from Narrowsburg, or not even 10 minutes.
And you have quite a few artists in your community, don't you?
Quite a few, and there's still houses that you see that are, sometimes 100,000 or lots, land is more expensive, raw land, but you can find like a double wide or a mobile home, which only reason I'm saying that is because usually a septic is already put in and a well's already in, and each of those costs anywhere between $10,000 and $15,000. So if you find somebody that's decrepit and it's costs like $30,000-$40,000 on a piece of land, you just knock it down. You've already got the electrical and the water, and you put up one of
and the driveway, buildings. Probably.
Yeah, and the driveway. Yeah. A driveway. I mean, any of that kind of leveling kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So you have a site, and therefore you can go and put up one of these pole barns, and there's a whole thing about people turning them into barnominiums. That's what they're called, So
what is that?
A barnominium is just like a pole barn that's converted. It's tricked out into make it into like a loft living house,
But it's not like it's shared when four people own it, and there's a, you don't mean like that kind of condominium.
No, I mean, you could do something like that, but it's a, it's a big barn that's converted, a prefab barn that's converted into a house, a living situation, a loft kind of situation.
So, right.
And that's like, it's lowbrow living, but it could be really wonderful too, because you could have huge ceilings and space, and and keeping it from under 200,000 or something like that.
Right. I think that's really good advice, Terry, to look for something that is already has the utilities, the well, and the driveway in place, because those are huge expenses.
Yeah, those are the expenses, because you don't want to have to wait for the permitting to get the electrical in, or, and having water, doing a protest on the land. So, and then you have this design ability to do whatever you want to do. And being in a little bit more of a rural situation, you don't have as many constraints on building permits and so forth.
Right.
So, and that's another thing that's kind of nice about that,
What about taxes? Do you have to pay taxes on these studios?
Well, the taxes, I'll just speak about for myself. The difference between paying taxes in New York and paying taxes in Pennsylvania, I'll just
tell you. You mean New York State? New York State.
New York State versus Pennsylvania's state.
Mm-hmm.
My taxes on my, I have an acre of land, and my taxes are, I think, $2,400.
Mm-hmm.
The same tax.
Per year.
Per year. The same taxes mm-hmm. on my, you know, sister-in-law's property is somewhere around $10,000, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's in Delaware County. So it's all varied, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
anything, but they don't tax. They don't tax the building itself. They tax your entire property. So if you make improvements to your property, then your tax rate will go up. Is that? Do I have that right?
That's true. Now, one of the reasons why I did not connect my building to my existing building, which I originally was going to do, that would have mm-hmm. been attached, you know, to that would have added to my taxes. A detached building is less taxes. So all these little tiny things from where your, you know, dream studio and what you want to do all adds up when you're on a budget. So
right. Then, Steve, what about taxes out on Long Island?
They're actually. Not
I mean,
as
they've got to be.
I thought they
really,
be, but and I don't.
Is it by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, town by town, or
yeah.
is it?
Yeah, it's town by town. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I bet
I'm already, you know, coming from New York City. It's way higher than Pennsylvania or, you know,
right.
surrounding.
Right.
Although Vermont
right.
is very expensive if you're not a resident. Vermont, if it's a country house, you would have
mm-hmm.
really high taxes. It's interesting.
Really?
So it does vary. Yeah. Yeah.
So they take into account whether you're a full-time.
Yeah.
So they want to discourage people coming in from outside, maybe.
I don't know. They've been a little bit like that.
Yeah. Chris, what about down in Georgia?
So one of the nice things about owning and living on your property in Georgia is we have a homestead tax exemption. So I'm locked in at the rate that I bought the house at.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and that is the same thing. If I wasn't living in the house, my rate would change yearly with whatever the yearly market rate is. And it's the same idea. It's for the city to make a little bit more money off of people who are just coming in, flipping a house, and then renting it out.
Right. And it probably creates more long-term residents.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's an advantage to being a long-term resident, yeah.
So, if you don't mind, like, what's your annual tax bill?
Oh, geez.
And, I mean, do you remember if it went up when you made the studio?
No, honestly,
or?
It's probably pretty close to Terry's. It's probably close to something like it was in Pennsylvania. I actually mm-hmm. know that area of PA pretty well because I grew up there. So, Honesdale, and I went to undergrad at Marywood University in Scranton.
Mm-hmm. Do you have studio visits out there? What's that like?
I have more studio visits here during the summer than I do in when I had a studio in Dumbo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that in a way, I just would have dinner parties and then I'd have, you know, a destination studio visit. But I'm just a different kind of. I didn't really have a lot of studio visits when I was working because I just always felt like I was working all the time. So there was like a little bit of interruption. But here I would complete something and then I would have, you know, like two or three dinner parties during the summer, which with more people from New York seeing my work than I would normally when I was in the city. So I think that the interesting thing, though, it's really I'm very fortunate to have High Noon as a gallery because he's got a really great storage space now. And I just brought in tons of work last week. So if that wasn't the case, I would just have to get like a little minivan or something that to be the, you know, carting work back and forth from the city. So that hasn't been worked out completely, the transporting of the pieces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
anyway. Steve, what about you?
Well, I haven't started painting out there, so I don't know.
But you had a studio out there before, just not this studio.
Yeah, but it was really during COVID that we were there. And,
I see. So you mostly focus on your New York place.
Yeah, I definitely have. And also when I do go to the country, I'm not on purpose, but I don't have much of a social life. It's really mm-hmm. just being on the property and going to the beach with the dogs. And I don't go around. I don't really like to go around. Drive around out there so much. So
it's becoming quite the big place for galleries now. Are all moving out there?
I'm torn because I never thought I would end up out there, but it's also the beach to me is half of it. Like going to the ocean, it's like everything. It's the ocean. It's been like this for thousands of years. It's just sort of
right.
That's really the big hit. It's like it makes it all worthwhile to me. And building the studio, I feel like I have a compound.
Can I just, while we're talking about the ocean, I just want to give a shout out. I went to see the Winslow Homer exhibit yesterday at the Met. And if you've ever painted water, you really have to go see this because he was an amazing painter. And there's never a bad brushstroke in his work. I mean, it's just the color and, you know, his ability to capture the waves pounding on the shore at just the right moment is kind of, something to see.
Oh, can I just say one thing, Sharon, that Steve has said? You know, I spent so much time out in Montauk, and I grew up surfing. I surfed for over 30-plus years, traveling all around the world surfing, and then I end up in Pennsylvania studio, you know,
yeah.
And mm-hmm. you know, where I would think that I would be, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we make choices,
right? Yeah, but there you are. Yeah. But there you are with your 2,400, you know, tax bill. It looks pretty good, right? Because you break it down, it's $200 a month.
My surfboard's out back too.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Does anybody, any questions or comments? Anybody out in the audience want to come up before we close the room for the day? It's been nice to come back to Clubhouse. Nice to see everyone here. I had a little hiatus there. It's been a busy year so far. Okay, it looks like we don't have anyone who wants to come up and say hello. So I just want to say, upcoming things. We've got a special conversation on June 1st, and this one is going to be at 10 a.m. I think June 1st is a Wednesday, at 10 a.m. with Carolyn Zick, who's an artist and blogger who's been writing Dangerous Chunky since 2001. And first she wrote from New York, then Seattle, and now New London, Connecticut. And I became familiar with Dangerous Chunky when I first started Two Coats of Paint. It used to be a digest format, and she was one of my go-to blogs for content for Two Coats of Paint. So anyway, I'm looking forward to finding out what she's been up to, how she's been dealing with a serious cancer diagnosis. All right, what else? We've got, if you want to share the conversation or just listen to it again, Two Coats Conversations are now archived in podcast format on most of the podcast platforms where you can listen and subscribe to Two Coats of Paint Conversations. And we'll put links in the show notes to the some of the manufacturers that were mentioned and so forth. I want to thank Terry and Steve for talking to us today. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks, Chris, for contributing. It's great to see you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Sharon.
It's really fun. Good to talk to you, Steve.
Yeah, Terry. Okay. I look forward to seeing pictures, Terry, as you finish.
I will post the updates. I'm getting excited.
Yeah.